Vingan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. We are endeavoring. Is that the word you'd use? Endeavoring? Efforting Elliot Friedman. So the first half of the Stanley Cup final is set with the Florida Panthers for the third consecutive year. We do have Elliot Freeman. So let's go to our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in our friend Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, I do have a message that you need to relay to the rest of Canada. I know that you have a large platform. Hockey is officially a Sun Belt sport. Because now that the Florida Panthers are back in the Stanley Cup final, by my rough count, 8 of the past 9 Stanley Cup finals have involved at least one Sun Belt team. That's going back to 2017 when the Predators were in the Stanley Cup final against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I know, I feel like it might be too simplistic to say, well, those are the no state income tax states, Dallas and Vegas and Florida and Tampa Bay and Nashville. But I think, again, I think that's too simplistic. Why do you think the Sun Belt has had the run that it's had, making it to the Stanley Cup final and winning multiple Stanley Cup championships?
Well, first of all, are you saying that you do not consider Boston or St. Louis as part of the Sun Belt?
It's a stretch. I do know.
Vegas was a stretch, but he showed me a map.
I had to pull up a map for Elliot.
Vegas does touch the map.
Vegas is more south than you think. That's true. Yeah.
I did pass elementary school geography, so I know that Massachusetts and Missouri are not in the Sun Belt.
I think there's a couple of things. You know what? Everybody, like the no tax states, it's a thing. But don't forget that Florida, as an organization, the Panthers, they were disaster zone for a long time. Like they had all the same advantages Tampa did, but they didn't do anything with them. Finally, they figured it out, and now they got all those things. I think it's a few things. I think number one, it's the no tax state. I think it's the weather. I think it's the quieter media. Like there are some places, especially in Canada, where there's a lot of noise around teams, and I think that's a factor. So I think when you build all those things into it, the no taxes, the better weather, just the quieter way to go to the rink every day. I think you get into a situation where there are some real advantages in those cases.
I do want to ask you about another Sun Belt franchise that did not make it to the Stanley Cup final, and that is the Carolina Hurricanes, who were eliminated last night by the Florida Panthers. And I thought Rod Brindamore's post-game news conference was incredibly fascinating. And he was asked a question about, now that the Hurricanes have once again come up short, is it time to adapt? Is it time to alter the system? And his answer, paraphrasing here, was, I feel like that's been our game for a long time, meaning the game that the Panthers have perfected and have taken to 3 consecutive Stanley Cup finals. And he said, they've kind of picked it up the last couple of years and made it that much better, so that's what we've got to get. So I'm curious where you think Carolina goes from here, because they win playoff series every single year, but they haven't been able to get over that hump. So what do you think happens in Raleigh this offseason?
Well, I think, number one, you know, the owner there, Tom Dundon, has always talked about pursuing a superstar, and that's why they made the trade for Rantanen this year. Rantanen, there was somebody they wanted to get. They didn't have a superstar player, and it didn't work out. So I do wonder if they're going to look at getting a superstar too. I think they got beat for a couple different reasons. Number one, I believe that Florida was deeper. That's number one. I think Florida got more out of their elite talent. That's number two. Well, if you go out and get in a superstar, then you're sitting out there and you're saying, we hope that can help equal one of the problems. I think one of the other things too about Carolina is they're not a big team. They play hard. They play up and down. They don't back down from anything. They play a good, tight checking system, and they compete hard. but they aren't a physically powerful team. And I thought they got pushed around in this series for a while. And I think if that's one thing, Adam, I wonder if they'll change. I wonder if they try to get a little bit bigger, a little bit more forceful. And that is the kind of thing I look at them to do. I think Brind'Amour was 100% right about the style you got to play. They play a playoff style, and that's why they are relatively successful in the playoffs compared to most other teams. But I think they have to get to a higher skill level, and I think they have to get a little bit more forceful. That was the difference between Florida and Carolina to me in this series, or at least two of them.
In Edmonton, there is news that Matthias Ekholm is expected to return to the lineup and make his postseason debut against the Stars tonight. But I want to ask you about Zach Hyman. He's out for the remainder of the playoffs. For those who don't watch the Oilers regularly, can you put into context just how big of a loss that is for the Edmonton Oilers?
Well, I think it would be like in Nashville, if you were in the Stanley Cup final and you lost not one of your top players, but one of your important complementary pieces. Like, you know who I really remember from your cup, and I thought he was just a great, great bulldog of a pain-in-the-ass player, was Patrick Hornqvist. Like, I loved watching Hornqvist play. And you know, he obviously played for Pittsburgh, and he was a great player. And he scored, obviously, a huge goal, too. That is a guy that That is a guy that I would compare Zach Hyman to. You know, Patrick Hornqvist was a seventh-round pick. I believe Zach Hyman was a seventh-round pick. They weren't the best skater. They weren't the best player. They were a guy that played with great players, complimented them, played hard, went to the net, scored big goals, and were beloved by their teammates. Like, that's who those guys were. And, you know, I think Hyman, the thing about Hyman was, we were joking that he coasted the regular season. He played 71 games in the regular season this year. He had 59 hits. He had less than one a game. In the playoffs, I think he had 100 and was averaging about 6.5 a game. And he was a bulldog and a very popular teammate, too. They're going to miss him.
Elliot Friedman is with us. We're talking hockey with him. And Elliot, just back on the Sun Belt theme for a minute. It's interesting to me because you hear this floated around. Nothing really has gotten done about it. And you hear the same kind of thing where you hear LTIR, got to close that loophole type of thing. It dawns on me, though, that you think about Florida specifically, and I think Tampa would be in this category, where if you utilize both to your advantage, now we're talking about a pretty significant ability to get you the depth. You just talked about how Carolina doesn't quite have the depth that Florida. Well, one of the reasons Florida's got the depth, Sam Reinhart, for example, signs a contract that maybe he wouldn't have signed for another team. And then the LTIR allows them to get easier a guy like Seth Jones and a guy like Marchand, right? So the combination is kind of deadly. Now you're looking at this team that really is tough to beat. So the two of them together, I wonder if that spurs on tweaks to the next CBA to try to close a little bit of that loophole.
I am expecting there to be something about LTIR in the next CBA. Yes, I am expecting that. They really went hard at some teams and players this year. If you'll notice that, Evander Kane, who missed the whole season for the Oilers, he had to miss a playoff game. I think there's something like that they're discussing. Obviously, I don't know what it is until I see it, Willie, but I've heard that that's what they're discussing. Yes.
Hmm. We asked you about Jonathan Marchand, so last week,
and you can ask me again.
Because
I was doing work on this all week, knowing that I have homework assignments for Nashville at 1 p.m. local on Thursdays. So yes, there is something here, but what I am under the impression it is that I don't know that he's submitted a list of teams or anything like that. I don't think we're at that point. But I think that the Predators are aware that he would consider a trade, but it would have to be a preferred destination. And I don't think, guys, there's a lot of them.
Right. And that would make sense. So the one that is just obvious because he's from there and the team that we're talking about in the Montreal Canadiens has the type of cap space and a young team where it would seem like there's a lot of check boxes that you would say there's a term which we're not supposed to use on the air.
I've banned that phrase, Elliot. Checked all the boxes.
We've retired it because of certain reasons. But
that's good, Adam. I think that's a crutch. I like that.
You can't go to you can't go to the well of the same saying too many times.
Try asking Kevin Bieksa if he'll ban that phrase. I wonder how that will go over.
Okay.
So it would be easy from afar without knowing anything about where everybody's actually thinking that, hey, that might be a fit.
I'm not sure. And I'll tell you what I've heard here. Number one, last year, one of the reasons Marchessault didn't end up in Montreal was they weren't crazy about the 5-year term. I'm not sure how they feel about a 4-year one. The other thing, and I don't want to totally poo-poo this because you never know what happens until it happens. But also, don't forget, Jonathan Marchessault is, he's making a good salary, 5.5 the next 4 years. He's in a no-tax state. He came from a no-tax state, Vegas, and he's in a no-tax state, Tennessee. Tennessee's a state.
Right.
Montreal is some of the highest taxes in the league. And I think that may be a factor in all this. Marchessault is a guy who's earned every penny he's made. He was a late bloomer. This is the biggest contract of his career. I think there are some teams out there who, ever since his name got out, they've been kind of like, they're not convinced he's going to want to go somewhere where that could affect his salary. So we'll see. My answer to that is we'll see, Willie. But I do think that's going to be a factor. Not saying it's impossible, but I do think it's a factor in these negotiations. One team told me pretty clearly that when a player agrees to be moved out of a place like Nashville, they will look at, okay, how is their take-home number going to be affected?
Yeah. Another aspect of this, when we've kicked this around by ourselves, Elliot, is I just don't see after 1 year that you would be in a mode, if you're the Predators, of just getting rid of the salary. Because a lot of times when you make these trades, it's just, will you take the salary and not get a whole lot of return back because of that? I can't see why they wouldn't try it one more year. So tell me, if you think the Predators would actually go down this road, would they be looking to do just that, or would they be looking to make a hockey trade, or else they come to that same conclusion? Let's just keep them here, and let's try to give it another go.
I think that you're always looking to make a hockey trade, Willie. You never go into something unless you absolutely have to, with the idea that we're going to do this simply to do it. I would say this. Nobody envisioned this happening a year ago. Everybody knows that what happened last year cannot happen again this year. And I think the reason that his name is even out there in a limited way is, to me, it says that if you're going to fix the problem of last season, one of them is your roster construction. And can you have your roster can you solve that problem if, for example, him and Stamkos and Forsberg are all there?
Right. All so right-hand this, shots, for example. That's the one thing that gets talked about a lot.
So what this says to me is, and don't forget, Barry Trotz was a head coach. He understands that now. And so what it says to me is the fact that Marchessault's name has even been out there indicates to me that the Predators are saying one of the ways we may have to fix this is simply end the problem. And the other thing, too, is, as we know, there's been this whole kind of thing with Marchessault and Brunette. And since they're both coming back, the Predators have to ask themselves an honest question. Do we think this can work? do we really believe that this can work? And internally, you have to be very blunt and very, you don't have to be that way publicly, but internally you have to be. So I think at the very least, like Marcia So still, I think there are people out there who are going to look at Marcia So and say, bad year last year, Stanley Cup final MVP 2 years ago. Like there's still a player there, right? I think the term will scare some people, but not everybody. I think if you think Marcia So can help you next year or 2 years, you're looking at this very seriously. But the fact is his name is even out there, Willie, it says to me that the Predators are looking at this and saying, we may have to take an honest, hard look about considering something that we hadn't thought of, that we never thought we'd have to consider a year ago, and that this didn't work. And our best way to help try and fix it is making this kind of a move, because if we come back with the same thing, maybe we're just kidding ourselves.
Elliot Friedman joining us on D-Maze, Vingit, and Donick from Sportsnet. Elliot, so let's look at it from a different perspective. This would be a classic change of scenery trade. We see a lot of that in the NHL. So I haven't had too much time to explore the rest of the league for prime candidates on other teams who could also be looking for a change of scenery. So who are some of the notable players who could fall into that category on other teams this summer?
Bowen Byram, Buffalo. I think there's a few guys in Buffalo. Byram, Paterka. I think were one of the teams that was really hard in on Cousins last year, or really was at least interested. So you're well aware of what Buffalo has and what they may be looking to do. But there's definitely some Buffalo guys who would like a change of scenery. There's no question that's the case. Keandre Miller of the Rangers is another player who I'm starting to hear out there, his name out there, that maybe the Rangers aren't sure about this in a long-term way and are either considering a short-term contract or looking at the possibility of moving him. You know, Marco Rossi has become a popular name the last few days in Minnesota. There's no question that the two sides don't see eye to eye on a contract and maybe not necessarily a role. He was on the fourth line. You know, one guy I kind of wonder about is one of your old buddies who has not been signed yet to an extension in L.A., and that's Tanner Jeannot. You know, you look at the way the playoffs get played now, the Kings really missed Tanner Jeannot this year in the postseason. It hasn't gone great for him as anybody expected since he left Nashville. That's the guy I've wondered about. Could there be a reunion for you there?
Hmm. Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet NHL insider, joining us on D-Maze, Vingit, and Donick as he does every Thursday during hockey season. Elliot, great stuff as always. Thank you for your time. We'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a great week.
You as well. Elliot Friedman joining us on the program. A lot to unpack there about Jonathan Marchessault. And as Elliot said, there is a lot of smoke there because he's not the only NHL insider who's reported about Jonathan Marchessault. So let's unpack all of that coming up next. 615-737-1025. We are live at Hermitage Golf Course for the fourth annual 615 Open Charity Golf Tournament benefiting Folds of Honor and presented by Gary Force Acura and Atmos Energy. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game.
How open is Marchessault moving on after just 1 year?
I think he's pretty open. I think it's within reason, like isn't going to probably accept a deal to just about anywhere, depending on how he shapes his list. But I do think that when you look at his season, as down as it was for a Preds team that really, really struggled to score as a whole, he's another guy still ends up with 21 years in a bad year. And at $5.5 million, not an exorbitant contract by any stretch of the imagination. It's the term on it that's problematic for a 34-year-old. But if you're a team out there knowing that the cap is rising significantly and you have aspirations to take a big step forward next year, why can't Jonathan Marchessault be part of that in a 30 to 35 goal clip if you're betting high? I think it's a relatively low risk move. And I think he's open to the idea. I think in a perfect, perfect world, he would love to go to the Montreal Canadiens and go home. I don't know how open they are to that, given the term on his deal, but you could see him helping a pretty good offense already kind of continue to take that next step and feels just like a true Marty St. Louis type player, doesn't he?
That was Frank Saravalli, NHL insider for Daily Faceoff. There is a lot of smoke around Jonathan Marchessault. We just heard from Elliot Freeman. There was Frank Saravalli. Chris Johnston of The Athletic has Jonathan Marchessault on his new trade board today at The Athletic. So a lot of smoke around Jonathan Marchessault. But Willie, there was something that Elliot said that you highlighted to us during the break that I want you to share.
You know, because I had listened, you had let me know about that Saravalli podcast. Frank Saravalli does a good job, has for a long time. Daily Faceoff is a pretty popular site. So I listened to it. It made sense to me that was logical. What I had not considered is something that Elliot brought up right away. You were talking about the Sun Belt and the no state income tax. Jonathan Marchessault has played his entire career
in the Sun Belt,
Tampa Bay,
Florida,
Vegas,
and Nashville.
So he is not used to taking the big chunk of state tax
or province tax, whatever, out of
the paycheck. And so that would be a significant jump. And he does have a modified no trade clause. So it's not as simple as I'll go home, because what that podcast, the Daily Faceoff, just talked about does make some sense. Montreal has got some young guys. They could use a veteran who's been up the chain into the top of the mountain. You know, that would seem to make a lot of sense there. And he's from there. That could be good. Martin Saint-Louis seems like his kind of guy. You know, they play a different system. They play a little more deliberate. They're a little bit more probably angled towards the way he plays than the way Andrew Burnett likes to play, which is a little more straight line. So I see a lot of things that line up, but that is a big one. So I don't know.
Now, my thing is, okay, I can see because people, like players choose to go to places for various reasons. Some it's I want to go to win a championship, that place, or I want to go to make as much money as I can. You know, so I can see Marchessault, if he didn't win a championship, and he thought Montreal was close to a championship, like legitimately was going. Then
they're on the come up.
Yeah.
But I'm saying they're building
within the next year or two.
Mm-hmm. That probably won't happen.
Exactly. So if I think they're, then I'm more inclined to sign with them because the money I may lose in taxes, I generate because I win a championship. But because he's already run that championship, I'm not sure now he's going to want to go to a place that's going to take majority of his money. And they're nowhere near, at least in the next 2 years or so, of winning a championship.
So here's my stance on this idea of trading Jonathan Marchessault. I'm not giving him away. He has 4 years left on his contract, signed last summer, $5.5 million cap hit through those 4 years. I am not attaching a sweetener to get rid of him. So if a team says, we'll take him on, but you have to attach a second-round pick, no, thank you. I'm not that desperate to get rid of him. At least that's me talking. I can't speak for Barry Trotz. I'm not doing that. I'm not retaining salary. Like, I'm not giving him away. If there is a hockey trade out there and there is a comparable player who also needs a change of scenery and you swap him, I would be open to that.
So what if they said, give me a second round pick, you take the salary, and maybe as a player, would you do that? Because you're giving up a second round pick, but second round picks isn't like they're not like they are in basketball or football.
You can find a lot of good players in the second round in the NHL.
But if they're taking a salary and you're giving up a second round pick, isn't that should be a win-win, right?
What do you think, Willie?
I lean your way. I don't think they should just bail and just say it's a sunk cost and we're going to give them away. I don't like that mentality. I don't think it's there. And I'm not sure that there's free agents out there on the market this particular offseason where you could justify it and say, we'll take the money
right. And
we'll spend it better elsewhere. I don't know that that's also because let's go back into history. When they traded PK Subban, they didn't really get any assets back to speak of. They got a couple of second-round picks, It was underwhelming. A couple of middling prospects, none of which I don't think really turned into
anything.
Don't
you dare disrespect Steven Santini, Willie Donick.
Steven Santini, he was Jeremy part of that Davies. Deal. I think they drafted.
But it was
Igor,
a cap dump.
Igor Afanasyev was one of the draft picks.
And they used that money to sign Matt Duchene.
That's where I was going. So they justified it by saying they wouldn't have been able to go after Duchene had they not been able to offload the entire $9 million. They essentially took the same money and gave it to Duchene.
Yes, basically. Yep.
So I don't know that there's that guy out there that they have their eye on this year where they could say, well, let's offload Marchessault's salary. We'll take that five-point-whatever million, and we've got this guy that's going to fit better. But at the same time, Elliott brings up 2 points that I think he's really done his homework because I think this is the crux of it. Can Andrew Burnett and Jonathan Marchessault be on the same page, make up after clearly a year where they were not in sync? Right, you can make it out to be as dramatic as you want, or non-dramatic. But the fact is,
there was a little tension there.
Sure, on some level.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom line is, as a result, neither the team nor Jonathan Marchessault was effective. Mm-hmm. Right, so can they figure that out? And the other part that I think has been undersold is the Jonathan Marchessault, Philip Forsberg, and Steven Stamkos all shoot right-handed, and that is. That doesn't mix very well on the ice. It doesn't mesh very well. And when I first heard that, I was like, well, they'll figure it out. These are three great players. The more the year went along and I would ask more people about it, the first person that brought it to my attention was Ray Ferraro just a couple of days after they made these moves. He's a very astute hockey guy. He said, is that going to work? Those three guys on the power play all shooting the same way, the dots don't connect very naturally, could that work? And it was a thing. It was a thing. Yes, they did have that, 20-game stretch where they played together on the same line and they all seemed to get hot at the same time. That was nice. But long-term, I still think that is a round peg in a square hole to a degree, which is another reason why I think you would consider all this if you had a, quote, hockey trade there.
Nate on our text line says, the big problem I have with moving Marchessault is that there would be little to no grit on the team. I think I would be okay doing it if the Preds could get Tanner Jeannot back for the grit factor. And Elliot mentioned that Tanner Jeannot may be needing a change of scenery ever since, let's be honest, ever since David Poile on his way out the door fleeced the Tampa Bay Lightning, fleeced the Tampa Bay Lightning for Tanner Jeannot. Jeannot has not been the player that scored 20-plus goals that 1 year in Nashville, but he does remain a heavy presence, throw in the body, all of those things. But I do want to touch on something that I asked you to during the break, and I'm trying to see it from both sides, because this was my question. What would it say about Barry Trotz if he traded Jonathan Marchessault this summer? Because that would be two contracts that he has signed that he has moved off of within a year of signing.
Three.
What was the third?
I think if you count trading Alex Carrier, I would put it in somewhat of the same category.
Okay, so it might be three. Yeah, that's fair.
Maybe even Dante Fabbro would be in the same sort of umbrella.
That is true as well. I'm thinking
keep the asset and then pivot off of it pretty
quick.
But
I'm thinking Tommy Novak and Jonathan Marchessault. Because my first thought was, one angle was, what does that say about Barry Trotz's talent evaluation skills, that he signed those two players? Again, I'm thinking Novak and Marchessault, but you're right about Carrier and to an extent Fabbro. He signed those two players hoping that they would be key contributors, and then he had to move off of them. But on the other token, as you said, Willie, during the break, perhaps it shows that Barry Trotz is willing to admit mistakes and move on versus David Poile, who at times would hope and pray that things would work out and maybe hold on a little bit too long.
I think it illustrates how hard it is to be a GM because you can't predict the future.
No.
And I think there are some GMs that are much more, let's not get too caught up in today and let's ride it out. Let's play it out a little bit more and give it some time. I think David Poile would fall more into that category, whereas Barry Trotz, who has the coach's DNA, is a little bit more in the trenches every day with his mindset of, man, this isn't working. This isn't working. Do I need to pivot out of here and just try something different? I don't know if it's evaluation. I don't know if either one is wrong in the evaluation. But I do think there are traits that GMs have. Some are more patient than others. Is that fair to say?
Right.
I think I would. Here's my analogy. It may be a good one, may not be. I think David Poyo was more of the. I am going to go through the whole full tank of gas before I
like Joe Rexroad. Yeah. Did you hear this story about Rexroad?
Rexroad had a rough week. Just think of Rexroad's story.
Outside of his
the tick bite.
There was the tick bite. He did get but apparently coming home from Indiana for his son's rugby tournament, I think it was. He pushed the limits of his gas tank because he was hoping to find cheaper gas, and he ran out of gas.
He ran out of gas on the side of the road, on the highway.
Oh, boy.
He Kramered it.
And not even that. He got out of his car, walked over a mile, and then they didn't even have a gas tank. They didn't have a gas tank for him. They could put his gas in.
So he just carried it in his hands?
Like no, he stayed there.
I think AAA ultimately came.
And AAA ultimately came, and he thought AAA didn't come with gas. Like,
so,
come
Rexroad.
To you with gas. So he decided to walk over.
But he concluded his week by being on the set on the Paul Feinbaum show with the white sand beach and the ocean waves crashing behind them at Destin, Florida. But sorry, Derek. Please continue your point.
So you think David Poyo will take it down to the E-tank?
I think David Poyo was more of the E-tank. Let's get everything out of this player we possibly can. And Barry is more of a, okay, if it's not, we have a tank now. I got to make a change. I got to do something different. I got to go get another, tank of gas or another half a tank of gas because we ain't going to make it. So he's one of those guys that if it's not working in the middle, like he doesn't seem like a guy that, especially when there seems to be a lack of chemistry there, not that the player isn't playing well or playing the way you thought he was, but the lack of chemistry with he and the head coach is not there either. He's more inclined to just say, you know what, before it filters through the locker room anymore, let's cut this. Let's find a way we can land this plane easy, and sort of move who I may deem it didn't work, move those players to a different area.
I think Barry Trotz also, look at Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchene, what he did with those two contracts. He didn't wait around after he absorbed it from where he was kind of phasing into the job. After the season, he made a very distinct decision, which was not easy, and got nothing for it. But he moved in another direction. He started fresh. And that was probably an effective decision, right? So it's not like it doesn't ever work, right? It's just traits. It's just sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. What's your success over a long
you're
period
more,
of time.
You're more David Poyo.
I think I probably fall more in that category.
But you know why I say that? Because I always go back to Waze. You just roll with Waze. You roll with it instead of saying, you know what? You're not right. I'm going this way.
I was so the wayward son that day. I was carrying on like a wayward son.
You more David Poyo.
615-7.
Or Rexroad.
Or Rexroad, apparently. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on all of this smoke surrounding Jonathan Marchessault. But we'll wrap up the show next live from Hermitage Golf Course for the 4th Annual 615 Open Charity Golf Tournament benefiting Folds of Honor and presented by Gary Force Acura and Atmos Energy. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan live at Hermitage Golf Course for the 4th Annual 615 Open Charity Golf Tournament benefiting Folds of Honor and presented by Gary Force Acura and Atmos Energy. A reminder that you can visit 615open.com to take part in a silent auction benefiting Folds of Honor. And as we usually do, as we transition out of our show into Stillman and Company at 2 o'clock, Jared Stillman in the house. Hello, Jared.
Stillman and Company! Am I on?
He's not on.
I don't think you're on.
You're not on.
Not on.
So which button is this?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Stilly.
Stilly.
I'm not blaming you. I'm messing with you.
It looks like they're all on.
Yeah, it looks like they're all on. Just start pushing buttons.
No, we don't want to be taken off.
I'm not talking about
that. I got it.
All right, there he is.
See, he just started pushing buttons.
That's why he's the best in the business.
That's not the button I would have hit.
He just started pushing buttons.
Was that the button you were going to hit?
No, it was not. It was not.
I saw that the other three buttons were pushed in, so I figured that was probably the button to push.
All right, Jared. Well, You heard our conversation with Elliot Freeman. We're talking Jonathan Marchessault. What are your thoughts on this brewing situation?
I thought it took you guys a long time to get to Marchessault. I'm sitting there in the car saying Marchessault, 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 Marchessault.
We were going to get there.
Adam is sitting there like, do you think that the lower taxes make a big difference?
You
He brought you up. You got to work on your impression of me. Do you think that's why? By the way, Elliot said yes. I know this because I just spent a weekend in Toronto, and all anyone did was talk about the taxes.
Oh, we're not going to talk about your soft-ass Toronto Maple Leafs take. We're not going to bore our listeners with that.
Here's the thing. I do not want the Predators to trade Jonathan Marchessault. And it would not surprise me if both the Predators would kind of maybe like to exit from the Marchessault business and if Marchessault would like to exit from the Predators business. But I personally do not – I think that – you know, in my life, some of my best relationships have been built through conflict, and I believe relationships get stronger sometimes through conflict. And so I think what Marchessault brings, like his attitude, and I think they need a little bit of that. And I think Marchessault, you know, look, you signed the deal, and I heard Elliot say, you know, I don't know if he'd be interested in Montreal because of the taxes there. And so, like, oh, well, he only has a couple places he'd like to play. Well, beggars can't be choosers. So
would you have a no movement or a modified no movement? You do have some control.
So you can
right?
be choosy in a sense.
You can be somewhat choosy.
A little bit.
You can be somewhat
choosy. And how bad do you want this to happen? Are you facilitating it or not?
Sure.
That's part of it too, right?
I believe that, you know, if the Predators are going to be any good next year, and I'm talking about, you know, competing for a playoff spot next year, which my sense is the Predators believe that the 0-5 start and everything else was just kind of a one-off this season, and next year they should be back trying to compete. If that's the case, I think you have to do that with Marchessault. And so I don't want them to trade Marchessault. What I was worried about when he made the comments about Andrew Burnett, and the Predators still said, hey, we're keeping Andrew Burnett. What I was worried about was that the Predators were going to look at this and say, hey, that Marchessault, he's a bad apple. We don't want him around here. And I think maybe they need to kind of learn from each other here. Marchessault, very cutthroat with that Vegas-style attitude. I think the Preds need a little bit of that. And then I think on the other side of it, I think Marchessault is going to have to learn how to play nice. I mean, he signed up to play here. He signed up to be part of the solution, so go be part of the solution. So I want him to stay, and I'm just not sure that there would be, like, a really good return for Marchessault. So unless you're just trying to get rid of the money to go spend it on somebody else, I personally would like to see Marchessault stay.
I think, speaking of cutthroat attitude, doesn't seem like there's a lot of that happening at the Tennessee Titans facility. We talked a lot about Jeffrey Simmons yesterday and today. I know you talked about Jeffrey Simmons, among others. Where do you stand on the fact that the leader that the Titans like to preach to us about was not only not on the field, but not in the building yesterday?
So I'm just of the belief that you can't have it both ways all the time. And I think the Titans are always trying to have it both ways. You know, Brian Callahan is sitting there talking about, we got to make major changes, major changes, major changes. And all he changed was a special teams coach. Can't have it both ways. You know, in this case, you can't get up there and tell everybody that this offseason you're going to focus on building leadership and that this new Furkacte eight-team team bonding, kumbaya, rowing boats together, you know, kayaking and canoeing and barbecues and everything else that, you know, they're trying to bring around, that this is going to be such a transformative and big process for this operation. And then have the one guy who the Titans constantly say is our leader and shove down all of our throats not show up because, well, I'd rather go train in Dallas, which is kind of what I think happened here with Simmons. So I think it's just an example of, you know, the Titans saying, like, this is what we want to be about and then not being about it. You know, I look at this as, like, you know, some of us in our lives have always tried to lose weight. You know, some of us have done it successfully, including me at times. And, you know, I really have a hard time with the person that's like, man, I'll tell you, I got to lose weight. I'll take three pizzas and a slice of cake. Thank you. And that feels to me what the Titans are doing.
You're right. And the Titans are giving mixed messages here. Because on one hand, you know, Brian Callahan is saying, well, we're done with this leading by example stuff. You pull guys with you. And then on the other hand, you know, your leader doesn't show up. And it's like, oh, we know Jeffrey. You know, he's going to be ready for the game. We ain't talking about the game right now. that's the part that I think he's
we
not.
We just talked all
he's
about
not
the
reading the room.
Stuff.
Exactly. Right. He's not reading the room. We're not talking about the team. And no one ever questioned Jeffrey Simmons about him being, you know, ready to play every week.
Do I need to remind people of the record?
Exactly.
9-32.
9-32. So when
since
you,
the win at Green Bay. Hashtag the plane from Green Bay.
So when you have a or alcohol gate, beer gate, if you have a record of 9-32 over the last 2.5 years.
You suck.
No one.
Yes.
And factually, from a record standpoint, you are the worst franchise in the National Football League over that span, 2.5 years. You have been the worst franchise in the National Football League. So if that's the case, Jeffrey, you have, outside of it being a family emergency, because I'm pretty sure if it was, Callahan would have said it. But outside of it being a family emergency, you need to be here, at least on the first. You need to be here because Brian Callahan and the team is preaching this new pillar of it's not about what you do, it's about who you bring with you. Well, Jeffrey, you didn't bring nobody with you because you wasn't there.
I think Jeffrey Simmons has been coddled the last couple of years. I think that the Titans
– I would agree with that.
I think that the Titans have done this thing with Simmons where they've propped him up and made him feel like he's better than he actually is. I mean, he went on Jill Jelinek's podcast – and he was sitting there talking about how the media doesn't understand that I get double-teamed, and that's why I don't get sacks. And I'm like, you know, all the good players in the NFL get double-teamed. The great players are the ones who beat double-teams. You think J.J. Watt ever got double-teamed?
They got double-teamed every game.
And so with Simmons, it's always excuses. You know, and I was really disappointed. Again, I was really disappointed at how the Titans kept propping up Simmons as a leader, and they kept talking about how good Simmons is and how, you know, Simmons is this and Simmons is that and Simmons and Simmons. And like last year, Denard Wilson came out and talked about how Simmons is doing a great job getting pressure, but he wasn't actually getting pressure. And I just think that they've coddled him to where he thinks like he's Derrick Henry, and he's not. And he is not doing the things that if you really want to be a leader, he's not walking the walk. He's doing plenty of talking, but he's not walking the walk. And so to me, if Brian Callahan would never do this, because I don't think Brian Callahan has, and I'm not saying it's a mean bone, but it's like a hold people accountable bone in his body. I don't think Brian Callahan can strip Simmons of the captaincy and say, hey, you know, we want you to be a follower, not a leader, but that's what they should do.
I think there's a fear that if you don't play the game and hope that he falls in line, that you lose him. And I will give you an example. I do feel like when the Predators went through their strip down where it looked like they might have to move and the ownership was changing and it was very tenuous and David Poile had to strip his team down. He had to take it down to the salary cap floor. He had to trade, among others, his captain, Kimo Thiemann, along with Thomas Vokoun and Paul Kariya. He had to look at all these really good players. They had a great next year, but they named Jason Arnott the captain. And I think it was a little bit of the same thing. Could go either way when they thought, well, if he's not the captain, do we lose him, right? But there was a little, you know, question about his engine, night in and night out. Is he really the leader, or is he just the most decorated guy on the team? They went with it, and they had decent results, right? But I think it could. I think sometimes that's the mindset. Let's roll the dice into the middle, or let's put all the cards in the middle. Let's bet on this guy that he'll fall into line. But sometimes you get mixed results. Fair?
I think it's totally fair. I think he's a follower, not
it's
a leader.
It's not going well right now. It's not going as well as they hoped it would go.
Well, that'll do it.
I think that's fair to say.
That'll do it for us today. Jared will pick up our coverage right here live at Hermitage Golf Course, 4th annual 615 Open Charity Golf Tournament, benefiting Folds of Honor, and presented by Gary Force Acura and Atmos Energy. We will be back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Stillman Company coming up next.
Be love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, wonderful, and happy Thursday. Peace.